This is the Locked On Yankees podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network. Sean St. Jacques, Gary Phillips, we're back. Had a brief hiatus last week, but we've overcome our obstacles from a week ago, and we are back.
We're busy.
That's probably the biggest obstacle we've been dealing with over the last week or so, but we've stuck with it. Thanks for you guys for sticking with us as well. We're back for another edition of the Locked On Yankees podcast. Got some good stuff for you on the show today. Going to go through some possible pitching trade options for the Yankees later on in the show, as well as Luis Severino's stardom and consistency this season as well. But Gary, we've got a really fun first segment and a fun topic.
Absolutely. But before we get into that, you think they missed us?
Oh, 100%. I thought that was already implied.
That's a given.
Yeah, I think so.
I missed you, man.
I missed you as well. Okay. We've been getting used to this over the last, 7 or 8 weeks.
Right.
And there was definitely something missing in my life last week. It was definitely you.
Yeah. Definitely Locked On Yankees.
Yeah, definitely you and definitely Locked On Yankees. Yeah, so let's get locked back in to
right,
Locked On Yankees.
Let's lock in. So let's start off talking about, I don't know if any of our listeners read, but on, what's today? We're recording this.
Last day of May.
We're recording this on Thursday.
This will be
prior
for June.
To the Yankees opener with the Orioles. So on Wednesday, at the Athletic, this Q&A between Ken Rosenthal and Commissioner Rob Manfred came out. A lot of interesting stuff in there about pace of play, the new gambling laws, but also one of the things Manfred was asked about was an automated strike zone. And he said that technologically, we're a lot closer to this being possible than people realize. Not necessarily that MLB is going to do it, just that it's possible as far from a technology standpoint. So I was at the Yankee game on Wednesday, the closing game against Houston, a thrilling win, great game by Luis Severino, who we'll get into in a little bit. But before the game, I asked two of the Yankees veterans, CC Sabathia and Brett Gardner, what they thought about an automated strike zone. And it was funny because I got two very different responses, Sean. So I'm just going to start off with CC's thoughts. And, this is coming from a pitcher, and he basically said, quote, "We just want it right. If that can be the case, I think guys would be for it." And then I asked them, well, okay, what about the human element? Umpires are obviously a big part of the game. Mistakes are part of the game, always have been. And he said, "I think guys want it right more than the human element." From a pitcher's perspective, you get where he's coming from. But then I asked Brett Gardner about it, and he gave a little more thought and I guess consideration in his in his response. He said, "If I could go back and play my whole career with an automated strike zone, I feel like that would be to my benefit. But I think umpires try and do the best job they can do back there. Some are better than others, just like players are better than other players. I'd be too concerned with the game, with how the game would look if that happened, so I'm not too excited about it." End quote.
That's a very interesting response.
It's a very diplomatic response, right? And, as somebody who pitched when I was playing, I think I relate a little more to CC.
Okay.
And it's like, well, whether it's robots or an automated zone or more restrictions or requirements or mandates on umpires, however you want to figure it out, the strike zone could be a lot better.
I am very, very scared if Major League Baseball were to go this way. Now, maybe it's because I am bringing out the old school part of me that loves the game, how it's always been played, and could care less about if Major League Baseball... I still don't love the K-Zone that they put, the graphic on the screen.
I hate it.
People tell me all the time, I never notice it, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I do. I notice it on every pitch.
That's totally different because, we're watching a game, and we see that stupid box, and it's
And it's not accurate because it's up to the umpire where the pitch is.
And it's like, I don't need the box to tell me what a strike is.
That's the other thing.
I need an umpire who knows what the strike zone is. And that's the problem. It's so inconsistent. It varies from guy to guy. And you look at a team like the Yankees, which is statistically they have the most, or they're one of the leaders in calls against them as far as balls that are called for strikes. Aaron Judge is the number one player in that category.
Wow.
And it's just like there's no consistency. Yeah. And obviously this isn't a new problem. What is new is that there is technology to fix this. And I'm not saying implement that, but, you know, the threat of it being there, maybe that could at least serve as some incentive.
It's funny because even when you're watching a game or you're at the game, and well, in this specific example, you'd have to be watching the game. When calls are being consistently, but they're consistently out of the zone and they're being called a strike and everybody's being called the same way. I've watched a game on Yes, and Paul O'Neill brings it up sometimes. Yeah, you know, that was a strike, but he's been calling that all game. You know what I mean? And you have to adjust. So the K zone becomes irrelevant because if that pitch is outside, yet on every time to a left-handed hitter it's being called a strike, you've got to swing. And the fact that it keeps being brought up, well, you know, that should be a ball, but he keeps calling it a strike.
Right.
Well, it's not. He's calling it a strike. You've got to swing.
Sean, you sound like me when I'm coaching my 10-year-olds. My 10-year-old
if
cousin.
If it's being called a strike consistently and it's a little outside, you gotta swing. Or guess what? You're getting punched out.
Exactly. I for those that don't know, I have 10-year-old cousin. I coach her softball team.
He does it
and,
all.
I mean, you think you think major league umpiring is bad?
Yeah. Whew,
you should see these little league umpires. They're terrible.
Yes.
But and most of them, you know, aren't consistently terrible. Like, you have no idea where the strike zone's going to batter. But on the rare occasions where it's bad, but we know how it's bad, you know, I'm telling them all the time, like, you got to swing the bat. You got to protect. You got to adjust. And that's the case with the Yankees right now. But on a league-wide level, well, we have the technology to fix these problems, whether it be through stricter grading of the umpires in place or replacing them. Like, something's got to give because there's just such a discrepancy from person to person.
Two things. One, you see in the Little League World Series all the time,
this
become an issue.
Right.
Inconsistent strike zones with umpires that, yes, are very, very good, and they're picked to be in Williamsport to call those games.
Well, they're supposed to have big zones.
But when it's high and it's almost at the kid's head and you're calling it a strike, it gets a little ridiculous. But the more important thing, Gary, that I could see this being a huge issue is this could really affect, I think, pace of play. Because if you start to do this with an automated strike zone, I could see a rule later on being implemented where you could challenge and say, did the automated machine get that right? I want to challenge. And at some point, I could see it being implemented, getting a couple extra challenges a game to challenge balls and strikes. I could see this being absolutely off the rails when it comes to pace of play. And forget about it if they kept, you know, human umpires in and they did that. Right. So it would just
I think you have to have...
I think it would just get absolutely ridiculous.
You really have to have a precise machine as far as pitch tracking data goes. And we have that now with PitchFX. And, you know, if you track games on MLB.com's Game Day app, you know, you can see that stuff on there. How accurate, you know, that correlates to what's actually happening in the game, I haven't paid enough attention myself to really know. But what I know is that the guys that are behind the plate, that are calling the games in real life, they're not very good most of the time. So again, some better than others, but the problem is the lack of consistency.
I agree, and I think the other part that I would bring up, Gary, and I'm sure that, again, you know, Rob Manfred said in the Q&A that you mentioned that they're getting close to figuring out how this is actually going to work and how they're going to implement it. But what I would say is, and this is something I'm sure that they're already going to figure out, it just pops into my head, you know, how are you going to let a pitcher know that it's a strike right away? Are you going to have a machine out there? Is there going to be a...
I want like an actual robot.
Well, what about rain? What if they're playing through the rain? You can't have a robot out there.
I think we have waterproof robots at this point.
Is that a thing?
I think so.
I have no idea. You got to put a raincoat over the thing? A tarp?
You ever see the like the Boston Dynamics robots? They run and they gallop and they open doors. I feel like they can be outside. It's like we're starting to pitch a new episode of Black Mirror here instead of ways to fix baseball.
Well, what about this? What if a foul ball hits the machine? and the machine doesn't work anymore.
It's got to be able to withstand that. It's got to be a strong machine.
All right, are you going to put it through crash tests in a Ford garage? What are you going to do?
That's what we do with cars.
Crash test dummies?
I'm just joking,
at some point you got to figure some of this stuff
and
out.
And I'm not saying all right, let's move to the automated strike.
Next season, let's do it.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, there are ways the zone could be better.
Right. But
to me, the best case scenario...
It has to get there at some point.
To me, the best case scenario is Manfred is floating this idea of implementing this
Means at some point it will get done. We've seen his track record suggests.
Best case scenario, in my opinion, this idea is floated. Now, the human umpires that we have in place see this. Obviously, they would not be very thrilled about it. And they use it as motivation to improve. And I think that's a way that makes everybody happy. And if they can't do that, if they can't adapt when there's a better alternative hanging over their head, well, then they probably deserve to get replaced anyway.
All right, Gary, let's get back to the real baseball for a little bit here. And start out with Luis Severino, who has been off the charts good again these last couple of weeks.
Saucy.
It seems 100% extra fire on that sauce. But he's been so good, especially against the Astros this season.
That's what's big.
Gary, which has been really impressive to watch. And again, he came up huge in a series that the Yankees probably had no business winning, but came back to indeed win over the Astros. And you just look at the numbers this season overall on Severino, 2.31 ERA. He's 8-1, 78 innings pitched, and you look at the strikeouts to walk ratio. I mean, 92 strikeouts to 21 walks. We're not even in June as we're recording this podcast. That is insane, and he's already an early Cy Young candidate. But like you said, if that's not enough for you, he's pitching as well as against anybody. When you look at the best team, arguably the best team in baseball, he's dominating them.
Right. So Severino's career high in strikeouts this year is 11. He's done it twice, both against Houston,
including one in Houston,
which is a team that, you know, forget their general reputation as the best in baseball, reigning world champions, blah blah blah. Like, this is a good contact team. This is a team that puts the ball in play.
You look at the run last year, Altuve never struck out.
Right.
And Correa never struck out. And you look at throughout that lineup, these are guys, Yuri Gurriel but rarely strikes out. These are guys that put the ball in play. And for Severino to have back-to-back 11 strikeout games.
No problem.
Incredible.
On Wednesday he made one mistake. Max Stassi got around on a fastball.
Yes.
After the game, Austin Romine said, yeah, sometimes you just got to give a guy credit for a good swing on a good pitch. But aside from that one mistake, I mean, I'm sitting there in the third, fourth inning thinking all right, I'm finally going to get to see a no-hitter. he was pitching that smoothly.
I just want to say this too. The Yankees in general, 6 out of 8 against the Astros, including 3 out of 4 on the road where they couldn't win a game in the postseason. And once again, Gary, they dominated Dallas Keuchel. They got to him again late in the innings.
Dallas Keuchel has not been himself this year.
But the thing is, Dallas Keuchel came into that start with a 1.74 ERA against the Yankees. That's the best he has against any team in the big leagues, and they got to him again.
Right, yep. No, for sure. It's impressive what they've been able to do against him, and even just hanging with all of Houston's starting pitchers. Verlander obviously got the best of them in this series, but even if they don't get to him, they hang around with the rotation. But we're recording this. You're going to be hearing this 2 days after that series ends, so we don't want to too hung up on the Houston series. But what we bring up Severino because...
Just
how good he's been, but also when all else fails or you doubt everybody else in the rotation or the rest of the starters go through a little bit of a downward spiral, there's Severino to be your stopper. And you just look at what he's done this season and last year, and to think 2 years ago this guy was in the bullpen. You weren't sure if he was going to be a starting pitcher, if he was going to turn out to be a bust. I mean, he's just so damn good, and a lot of it just stems from his confidence. Confidence in his talent and his demeanor on the mound and his pitches, his sliders, totally different this year. His changeup has been way more effective, which you saw against Houston the other night. Yeah, he's been phenomenal. I saw somebody on Twitter mention, if you're starting a team, you got to take a pitcher that you're going to have for the next 5 years. Now, is there anybody else in baseball you're taking right now based on, you know, what he's accomplished over the last year and a half, his lack of an injury history, his age, his poise,
his stuff,
his talent? Like, is there anybody else you're taking? I mean, maybe you can make the case for Shohei Ohtani, but, like, focusing strictly on a pitcher.
Yeah.
Right. Is there anybody else you're taking right now?
No, I know I wouldn't. And listen, you just look at how he's been carrying the Yankee pitching staff so far this season. Listen, Jordan Montgomery's been hurt. You can't really factor that too much into it. And he's been good, by the way, in the 6 starts that he's had this season before the injury. Guys that are still active. Sonny Gray, 3-4 with a 5.98 ERA this season.
Domingo, it's not what you want.
Domingo Germán, so far this season, is 0-3 with a 5.45 ERA. Masahiro Tanaka, 6-2, but with a 4.62 ERA.
Very inconsistent. Even CeCe, who
I was going to say,
got
CeCe,
off to a great start. You know, he's
2-1, but he's flirting with a 4 ERA right now.
Right, which, I mean, is really a product of his last 3 starts.
Right.
He got off to his first 5 or 6 this year were phenomenal.
Absolutely. And it's funny, with CeCe, it doesn't happen every start like it used to, but I remember a couple of years there where he was still trying to figure out how to throw the cutter, and he was still trying to, you know, pitch, work on how he was going to pitch going forward as a veteran later on in his career. He'd always have that one inning where he completely collapsed. It would either be the 3rd or the 4th. He'd get through the first maybe inning or so, and he'd be figuring it out. He'd get some guys through, but then like the stat cast and the numbers always say, when you see a team for a second or maybe even a third time, that's when they figure out, and that's when they figured out CeCe. He's obviously, Gary, like we talked about last year, what Severino's doing right now is what CeCe would do last year as far as picking up the slack for the rest of the rotation when they needed a win and when they needed a big-time performance. But this year, at times with CeCe in these last couple of starts, it's been 1 or 2 innings where he just loses it. He just doesn't have it. He's losing location. He's walking guys.
And
it turns into a big inning.
That's what you expect from him at this point.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's going to get you X amount of innings or X amount of pitches, and it's the lineup's job to make sure it's secured a lead before that happens. You know, he's been a little shakier than usual lately, but I think at this point we know, like, hey, he's not making it past the 5th or 6th inning.
Right, exactly.
But getting back to Severino, you know, I'm looking at the leaderboards for pitchers here.
Everywhere.
I'm just going to read some of these off. You know, wins above replacement for a pitcher. He's 4th in baseball with 3.1, tied with Aaron Nola from the Phillies.
Aaron Nola, huh?
He's having a hell of a year.
The Phillies are having a heck of a year so far.
Wins, you know, he's tied for 2nd with Corey Kluber with 8. You know, Max Scherzer's the only guy with 9 thus far. Innings pitched, he's 4th with 78. He's made 12 starts already. He's already got a complete game and a shutout. Home runs per 9 inning, Severino's 4th. He's got a 0.462 percentage. He's only given up 4 home runs this year. Adjusted ERA, Severino's 6th. Just a testament to his durability and the innings he's given the Yankees. He's 7th in baseball in batters faced. His FIP is, he's 4th. His adjusted pitching runs, he's 3rd. I mean, he's up there in all the traditional categories, but also the sabermetrics. And again, it just shows you how dominant he's been. And even, you know, you go back before the, in between the Houston starts, you know, the in Houston and the versus Houston at home the other day, he had 4 straight starts where he went 6 innings pitched and gave up a couple runs in each. And it's like, that's a bad day for him now. you know, he's come so far in such a hurry. And the thing I really like about him is, you know, he's so level-headed. When you talk to him after a game, when you talk to him after a gem especially, it's just like, you know, I'm just going about my job and doing my best and trying to be confident in my pitches. Like, dude, if I threw 98 miles per hour with that slider, I'd be the cockiest pitcher in the world, you know?
Well, here's the last thing we'll say here, Gary. I mean, this is the big stat for me. 12 starts this season that Severino's been out there. The Yankees, when he starts, are 11-1.
Right.
That's all you need to know.
When he pitches,
they win.
They win.
They haven't lost a game that he's pitched since April 10th.
And that's what an ace does.
Insane. All right, Gary, keeping it with the pitching theme, this is the last big topic for this podcast. The rest of the Yankees' starting rotation hasn't exactly been great. Right. We kind of mapped that out already.
We just got into that. They might need some help.
Might need some reinforcements on the trading market. We've been looking at a couple of guys that we think the Yankees might be interested in, and a couple we think that they really should be interested in really thinking about. Now, obviously, the big name, Gary, we have to start with, that's been linked to the Yankees is Cole Hamels. Everybody thinks that he could be a possible option on this team.
Huge reason the Yankees won the 2009 World Series.
Well, you look back and, well, first of all, to be fair to him, a lot of postseason experience. Right. Not all of it's been good. And the Yankees, like you said, touched him up a lot in the 2009 World Series. But there's a reason the Phillies won in 2008 and Cole Hamels was a big reason why.
Now, I'm just making jokes.
You look at him this season, though, Gary, and this is where I start to have pause. His numbers haven't exactly been great. I mean, he's 3-5 with a 3.74 ERA on a middle-of-the-road to bottom Texas Rangers team. Now, the offense has been injured quite a bit. You know, Adrian Beltre's been out for some time. Shinsu Chu's had a decent, not great season. Elvis Andrus has been hurt. So the Rangers haven't exactly been a formidable offense to support Cole Hamels this season, but just looking at the last couple of seasons, in 2016 he had a really good year, but last year, 11-6, but well over 4 ERA, you know, pitched one of the lowest amount of innings in his career, 148 innings, wasn't exactly stellar. Many think he could be on the way down. This could finally be the time in Cole Hamels' career where it's starting to be on the downward spiral a little bit. Again, his numbers, it's not like he has a 5 ERA.
Right, he's...
But he hasn't pitched in the postseason in a number of years, and with the Rangers, he's had one really good season and three really mediocre seasons.
Yeah, you know, I guess it all depends on what it takes to get him.
That's a great point.
He's obviously not the...
And the Yankees, by the way, have a lot of pieces that they could work with.
They can
here.
Get whoever they want.
Yes.
It's a matter of whether you want to part with those prospects or not. You know, he's obviously not the pitcher he used to be, but again, like you said, left-hander, postseason experience, knows how to win in October. And yeah, he's not having a bad year by any means. If they're going to get a lefty, though... I don't know. I don't know if he's the guy. You know, I think a much better option is Patrick Corbin with Arizona. For those that don't know the name, and maybe you don't, because
of where he pitches.
He hasn't been an ace forever. You know, he's got one really good year under his belt and a few mediocre ones. But right now he's got a 2.99 ERA, 0.942 WHIP. He's become the ace of that staff and one of the better young pitchers in the National League. He's going to be a free agent after this season, so you risk him being a rental. But what's good about Corbin is that he's a New York native. He grew up a Yankees fan.
He's relatively young. He's 28 years old.
Right, and he's actually said, you know, while still a member of the Diamondbacks, as recently as earlier this season, he said he would love to play for the New York Yankees, which, you know, when the article came out from USA Today, it kind of struck me as funny just because, you know, this is a guy on a team that's something right now, but at the time a winning team, a contending team, who's under contract. And here's the quote from Corbin in case you guys missed it. Quote, it would definitely be great to play there. I grew up a Yankee fan. My whole family are Yankees fans. My mom, my dad, my grandpa, everybody. Really, every generation of my family has been Yankees fans. End quote. So, I mean, it sounds like the guy might want to be a Yankee, which is definitely something you take into consideration when you look to throw a guy into this market, into the playoff race that he'll be in, the pressures that come with it. You look for a guy that wants to be here, but also, you know, just from living in the area, knows what it might take.
And also could be swinging into his prime years. Right, exactly. I mean, he's having a great year this season, Gary. By far the best ERA he's had in his career. Again, it's early. He's had 12 starts. Pitched his first career complete game shutout this season as well. He's been really good. And you could be buying him at the right time here if you're Brian Cashman. That's kind of the biggest upside with him, is that he has a ton of upside, right, and has been showing it this season as well. Quickly, another couple of guys that have been thrown out there. Chris Archer has been a guy that's been floated around, honestly, Gary, since the beginning of the season. But to be fair to him, or to be fair, rather, to, you know, people that are a little skeptical, 3-3, 4.29 ERA, a whip 1.3, not great.
Right.
He's got the stuff. Again, he's not on a great team either.
No, despite the numbers, you know, if you're the Yankees, I think you have... You happily take Chris Archer because you know the talent's there, but also because he's not a free agent until 2020.
Yes.
I just don't see...
Might be a lot to give up,
even if they gave up a lot. I just don't see the Rays doing it in division.
Yeah. You know? And that's the other thing. Right, you'd have to see him a lot
right,
if you're the Rays. But also, you know, how much could you really get back for him? From the Yankees, maybe a lot, but like you said... You know, they might, again, I don't know. The Rays, you know, they've been a little bit of a surprise at times this year. They're in a rebuild mode to a certain extent, but they also don't want to trade away their best guy. Because
if it saves them some money, they might.
That's the thing. If it's going to save them some money, they will happily do that.
Wouldn't be the first time.
A couple other guys that have been floating around. I did see an article that Danny Duffy was an option. He's had a terrible season.
Pass.
His ERA is almost at 6.
Pass.
Yeah, next guy. One other guy, Michael Fulmer's been floated around as well.
Another really good option, you know, that might cost a good chunk of the farm. Luckily, the Yankees have a lot of acres down there. Another young guy that's not going to be a free agent until 2023.
And he's 25 years old.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned Corbin being 28 and kind of just coming into his prime. You know, Fulmer's already done a lot to establish himself as a frontline starter. Right now, struggling a little bit.
Not great.
4.60 ERA, not what you want to see. Well, you know, a whip above, you know, 1.30. But past seasons, his first two seasons in the majors have been obviously very successful. There's a reason there's a high asking price on him. But yeah, if you're going based on, you know, just strictly the numbers, yeah, Fulmer and... Corbin and Hamels are probably the two guys at the top of your list. And again, it also, it's good that they're southpaws.
One thing I'll say about Cole Hamels, again, numbers can be misleading and you can kind of, you know, form it the way you want to. A lot of people are saying, you know, oh, well, the big thing about Cole Hamels, and I agree to a certain extent, is his postseason experience. And he did pitch in a couple of ALDS games, both of them that he lost, against the Blue Jays for the Rangers in 2015 and 2016. But Cole Hamels hasn't won a postseason game since 2010. That's a long time without postseason success. So to say that he's going to come in and provide that extra boost, listen, you know, he might. You know, who knows? But it's a little misleading to say that he's been, you know, successful in the postseason. It's been a while since Cole Hamels has been consistently good in the postseason. That's not all his fault. The Phillies, you know, kind of collapsed after they lost in 09. 2010, they were still around. But then by 2011, 2012, they were pretty much in a rebuild mode. And then you look at his time at the Rangers, they were supposed to go pretty far a couple of seasons. But the bats kind of went cold in a couple of those series with the Blue Jays. And a couple of the games that Cole Hamels didn't pitch, they didn't get very good starts. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, I got to say, Gary, after we've talked, I like Patrick Corbin as an option. Like
he
could be the leader in the clubhouse, at least based on what we're saying. I don't know what Brian Cashman's thinking, but if you're buying a little low on Patrick Corbin, give up a little bit for him, he could end up being a part of the rotation for a few years.
Yeah, and I didn't realize there's this piece up by John Heyman kind of about the Yankees' quote admiration of Patrick Corbin.
Interesting.
I'm just going to read you a quick passage, sure, and then, you know, we'll get out of your hair.
Yeah, we'll head out of here.
You've been listening to us blab on for long enough now. But this is Heyman, John Heyman, reporting on Patrick Corbin and the Yankees. Just a passage, quote, the Yankees are likely keeping an eye on Arizona's progress. Arizona's still in contention, as I mentioned. They love Corbin's pitching. They love that he's a New Yorker. And they don't mind that Corbin professed his like for the Yankees last month. You know they don't mind that one bit.
Yeah.
So, and end of passage.
It'll be and one other quick thing about Arizona. Obviously, Zach Greinke is there. He's supposed to be the ace. He's been pretty good for the most part this season. So you know that he's going to be sticking around. The other interesting part of this, Gary, is that Shelby Miller's been on the shelf for most of the season. He's going through extended spring training right now. When he comes back, if he's good and he's what they're expecting him to be, maybe they feel like they can maybe get something for Patrick Corbin, and then maybe that pushes it forward a little bit.
Well, even, you know, forget the baseball side of things. You know, you look at it from a money standpoint.
Yeah.
Greinke, like you mentioned, is
getting paid a lot of money. I'm not sure. Probably $20 million.
No, much more.
Yeah.
Closer to 30.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
He's making a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
And remember, they didn't want to pay J.D. Martinez in free agency
this
past offseason. That's not working out very well for them. So with Corbin going to be a free agent, you know, they might think to themselves, even if they are in contention, hey, we can get some young assets for this guy.
Really quick, I just wanted to see if I could find the salary. Yeah, Zach Greinke is getting paid $34 million this season. That's my bad there. I was off by a lot. But yeah, like you were saying, you know, Patrick Corbin could be a really good option, so we'll see how it all works out. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for us. Follow us on Twitter, at Gary H. Phillips, and for me, at SSaintJ7 on Twitter. Follow Locked On Yankees on Twitter as well, at Locked On Yankees. Appreciate you guys listening, and we will see you guys next time.
Take it easy.